It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees, sunny skies. Look for mostly sunny skies today with a high near 43, west winds to 30. Partly cloudy overnight with a low around 29, west winds to 25, gusting to 30. And sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 38, northwest winds to 20 are expected to increase to 30 tomorrow afternoon. Could gust as high as 40 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will be serving light refreshments as they have an open house, presenting their initial findings on their subsistence harvest survey in Kodiak. The state has sponsored a study of the Kinross plan to haul ore between its mine at Tetlin to its mill in Fort Knox, north of Fairbanks.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Just days from midterm elections, President Biden's expected to deliver a primetime address tonight on U.S. democracy. He will do so near the Capitol, site of the pro-Trump siege last year that attempted to stop Congress from certifying the results of the 2020 presidential election. Then-candidate Joe Biden won. President Biden is expected to talk about the January 6th insurrection. He is also expected to address the attack against House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's family when a man broke into her San Francisco home allegedly looking for her. She was not at home, but her husband, Paul Pelosi, was, and he was violently attacked and injured. The suspect faces state and federal charges. United States Capitol Police security cameras recorded the break-in at Speaker Pelosi's San Francisco home. NPR's Deirdre Walsh has details.
When 42-year-old David DePape broke in through a rear door at Speaker Pelosi's home, U.S. Capitol Police cameras captured the intrusion. The Washington Post first reported that the cameras caught the incident, but that no one was watching them at the time. DePape assaulted Pelosi's 82-year-old husband Paul with a hammer. When San Francisco police arrived on the scene, they witnessed the attack and immediately arrested DePape. There was no longer 24/7 police presence outside the home, which had been implemented after the attack on the Capitol last year. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
In Uvalde, Texas, residents will gather in their town square tonight to remember victims of the Robb Elementary School shooting and celebrate their lives. Today is Dia de los Muertos, a holiday rooted in Mexican indigenous culture during which families honor loved ones who've died. For a small Texas community where 19 children and two teachers were murdered less than 6 months ago, this occasion holds even deeper significance. Texas Public Radio's Dan Katz has more.
Families and friends will do their best to celebrate the lives of those they've lost, and in Uvalde, the lives that were taken.
This year is just going to be heartbreaking, but then come years on, it will mend and we can eventually get through this and heal.
Event organizer Katie Fulton says in the past, people in Uvalde would travel to nearby cities like San Antonio to observe Dia de los Muertos.
All my life I've lived here, and I don't think there's been any type of celebration like this.
There'll be music and food and dancing and a community ofrenda where people may combine their offerings and memories of lost loved ones. Perhaps a moment of unity for a community that's been deeply torn. I'm Dan Katz in San Antonio.
The Federal Reserve has raised its benchmark borrowing rate by 0.75 percentage point today. It's the fourth such supersized rate hike since June. From Washington, this is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska's Department of Fish and Game completed its first subsistence harvest survey in nearly 30 years for Kodiak's households earlier this year. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that researchers will present their initial findings at a community event later this week.
Fish and Game researchers talked to about 270 households on Kodiak's road system for its survey. They asked about everything from what types of fish people harvest and eat to whether they collect firewood. The department completed its last survey back in 1993. Jackie Keating is a subsistence resource specialist with Fish and Game. She says there have been some big changes in what Kodiak households harvest since then.
Things like crab and clams and other marine invertebrates were a lot more prevalent than they are today. That's shifted quite a bit.
The amount of food that households tend to harvest overall has also dropped slightly. Other things have remained consistent, like a strong local dependence on salmon. Keating says about 90% of households reported eating wild salmon. Keating says this data doesn't include specifics about individuals. It's more of a snapshot of how the community uses subsistence resources.
One of the things that it gets utilized for frequently is if community members want to put in a proposal to the Board of Fish or the Board of Game. These are one of the data points that you can use to demonstrate the importance of different resources.
The department is hosting a public event downtown at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge's Visitor Center for the community to review its initial data on Thursday evening. Keating says the department completes subsistence surveys in nearly 300 communities across the state every decade. Fish and Game completed subsistence surveys in the villages of Akiak, Old Harbor, and Larson Bay back in 2019. Researchers plan to gather data from Port Lyons and Yuzinki this winter. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A scoping process is underway for a state-sponsored study of Kinross's route to haul ore from its planned Manh Choh gold mine at Tetlin to its Fort Knox mill north of Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the independent analysis will look at forecast impacts and develop mitigation strategies.
A State Department of Transportation organized Alaska-Richardson-Steese Highway Corridor Study Committee representing a range of stakeholders met Monday to provide input on what the corridor analysis should consider. The ore haul has raised serious road safety concerns, but meeting facilitator Julie Jessen with CRW Engineering made clear that the study is not about taking a position on the Kinross plan.
Can't dictate to a private business what they can or cannot do.
The analysis will look at the Tetlin to Fort Knox mine corridor over three different time frames, according to project manager Randy Kinney with DOT study contractor Kinney Engineering.
20, 25 years out, maybe more. We're also going to look at it in a median term, which is 10 years or so, and then in a short term, which is 5 years.
Kinney outlined a proposed scope of work, starting with an inventory of current conditions.
It covers just about everything you can think of. Population, land use, traffic, crashes.
Kinney asked for input on what else should be considered in the assessment of current conditions, and Jeff Benowitz of Fairbanks suggested establishing base levels of hazardous materials that could be released from ore as it's trucked along the route.
Lead levels, arsenic levels, silver, cadmium, pH, because this is hazardous material. You know, Kinross is aware of this, and any sort of spill or dust is going to get in our waterways, get on our farms.
State Department of Environmental Conservation Representative Emma Pokin said the agency is tracking such concerns.
About potential impacts to water quality, the potential fugitive dust issues, obviously the non-attainment area in Fairbanks.
Much of the ore haul route is rural, but it also traverses developed areas of North Pole and Fairbanks. Committee member and FAST planning director Jackson Fox urged consideration of alternative routes through the urbanized areas
that impact less people and bypass the majority of our PM2.5 non-attainment area for air quality.
The corridor study, which will also include traffic forecasts and safety analysis, will use the information to come up with a list of alternatives to minimize impacts of the Kinross ore haul, as well as other traffic like military convoys. Kinney cautioned that alternatives must be financially viable.
So building a whole new road from Tobe to Fort Knox across Northern Alaska that may end up having the best benefit cost ratio, but is it affordable? Maybe not. So we got to kind of temper all of our alternatives with that.
Kenny said the corridor study will also identify funding options for its recommendations. A final action plan is expected to be released by the end of next year, about 6 months before Kinross anticipates ore hauling to start.
We want to make sure that we have something in place in time for whatever has to happen, it can be done.
The DOT is accepting comments throughout the study on its Tetlin to Fort Knox website. Kinross and the group Advocates for Safe Alaska Highways, which opposes the trucking plan, are both supporters of KUAC. In Fairbanks, and Dan Bross.
Tens of thousands of unionized port and rail workers on the West Coast are in months-long negotiations with shipping and rail companies. Potential strikes at the Port of Seattle or along the nation's railways could cripple economic activity throughout the country. And as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, a strike could also potentially cause Wrangell's trash bins to overflow.
Southeast Alaska is a patchwork of rocky forested islands, so there are only so many places to take out the trash. Most communities in the panhandle operate some combination of landfill service and barging baled trash down south. But Public Works Director Tom Wader explains Wrangell doesn't have that flexibility.
Where Wrangell is in a worse spot than some of our other communities is, you know, most of our other communities still operate some sort of a landfill. And so they're going to be able to subsidize, you know, their trash storage and shipping by, you know, putting a few more things in their landfill. We don't have that option.
Wrangell's landfill was closed in 2012, and the community hasn't opened another. That leaves the island with very little wiggle room when it comes to waste. Most of the time, that isn't an issue. Barge service to Wrangell is regular and prompt, and the sanitation department keeps the trash baler moving. From Wrangell, shipping containers of trash travel by barge to the Port of Seattle, where they're unloaded and shipped by rail to a landfill in central Washington. In recent months, though, two major union negotiations have stalled or fallen apart. One is between railroads and a dozen rail workers' unions throughout the country. Wader says if the rail companies and unions aren't able to come to an agreement, it could be not great for Wrangell.
What management will look like if they no longer are able to ship by rail to the Roosevelt landfill, that gets a little complicated and is not, I would say, not a long-term sustainable plan.
Wader says he's been in contact with the company that ships Wrangell's garbage down south. If it comes to a strike,
basically what has been communicated to us is that they will ship every single empty available container that they can north, and that communities are going to have to do their best at trying to stockpile the garbage as much as possible. That should give us a few days. If negotiations or a strike lasted more than a few days, Roosevelt has already been in contact with a number of other landfills in the Pacific Northwest, and they would consider shipping the garbage by truck to these other landfills.
The other stalled union negotiation is between shipping companies and West Coast dock workers, encompassing 29 ports up and down the coast and more than 22,000 dock workers. Either potential strike could have a serious impact on Wrangell's garbage. The speed Wrangell accumulates trash depends on the season, Wader says. In the summer, the 2,100-person community can fill a container every 2 to 3 days. In the wintertime, it's more like a week. Taking the average with the storage capabilities the sanitation department currently has,
we're talking probably like 10 days. And that's kind of best-case scenario.
Wader says Republic, the trash company, has indicated it would take on any increased shipping costs as a result of a union negotiation holdup. He says Wrangell's Public Works Department will be monitoring the collective bargaining process of the port and rail unions.
We're going to keep a close eye on it here in the next couple of weeks, and if this appears to be imminent, we're going to try to order, you know, every container that we can to try to get us as far as we can. And in hopes that Republic figures out at least some sort of over-the-road shipping option to get us through.
Republic didn't respond to a request for comment Tuesday. For Wrangell, if it does come to a strike, there won't be a moment to waste. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Slot machines, like most kinds of gambling, aren't legal in Alaska. But in the Prince of Wales Island community of Klawak, the local tribe is now running more than 20 machines that look an awful lot like the kind of slots you might find on the floor of a Las Vegas casino. And it's all perfectly legal. KRBD's Reagan Miller explains.
Rhonda Wren drove from Gregg to Klawak 2 days in a row to play the machines at the Klawak Casino.
I had lots of luck yesterday. I did great.
Nearby, Robert Baza was coming away from his machine with $300. He had heard that the Klawak Cooperative Association opened at the casino early last month and wanted to try it out.
Pretty good. It's paying off.
Gaming isn't new to Klawak. Before COVID-19 came to the island, the tribe hosted regular bingo games and pool tabs. But now, they've added more than 20 bingo machines to the casino, which share space with the tribe's mini-mart and smoke shop in the heart of town. The machines look nearly identical to slot machines. But technically, they're electronic bingo machines. And in most places in Alaska, they're illegal under state law, even under an exception that allows nonprofits to run raffles and bingo games. But here in Klawak, there's a twist. The casino sits on land held by the federal government in a trust. It predates the landmark Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Lloyd Miller is an attorney with the firm Sinotsky Chambers, based in Anchorage.
I mean, this is land held in trust for the benefit of the tribe.
The tribe's operation is legal under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. The law provides a framework for what kinds of gaming is legal in areas defined as Indian country. Miller says that's what makes it different from a recent case with some striking similarities. In 2018, the native village of Iklutna tried to open a similar slot-like electronic bingo hall in Chugiak, but they were shot down by state authorities and a federal court. Miller's firm was involved in that case. It's a little complicated, but Miller says it all comes down to land. The key problem? Iklutna wanted to open the casino on a native allotment, land that belonged to tribal members, not the tribe itself.
And when you're talking about an allotment instead of trust land, you then get into a secondary question about that asks whether the tribe has jurisdiction, territorial jurisdiction over the allotment.
And to qualify, the land needs to be under full jurisdiction of the tribe.
Allotment awarded to an individual who's a former chief. I mean, this goes way back in time. It was not a parcel of land taken into trust for the tribe, for the benefit of the tribe, and held in trust for the benefit of the tribe. That's a big difference.
But Klawak does have jurisdiction over the casino parcel. The tribe also has the appropriate Class 2 license from the National Indian Gaming Commission to go with it. A Class 2 license covers things like pull tabs and bingo, including the slot-style electronic machines. It's a step behind a Class 3 license that would allow for Vegas-style games with big jackpots. That's why, equipped with the right kind of land and the right kind of license, Klawak's casino is in business. Miller says there are other small parcels of trust land like Klawak's, like in Angoon. Back at the casino, Tribal Administrator Lawrence Armour says revenue from the casino helps the federally recognized tribe support its members and the community.
Just starting another enterprise. I mean, the smoke shop is what we pay a lot of our tribal employee salaries with if they're not covered by a grant. And we just needed another revenue source. So it was just one of the ideas that we started discussing, and the opportunity kind of fell in our laps.
Armour says he's seen Klawak residents come to test their luck, but also plenty of unfamiliar faces, too. Klawak's casino is the only one on Prince of Wales Island. But Armour says that may not be for long.
I think there are some tribes that were looking into it, so we were really trying to keep it under wraps as far as progress and who our contacts were to try to get this thing off and beat them to the punch, basically.
Armour says business has been steady. He says he thinks the machines will usher in a new interest in tribal gaming and even push out old standbys like pull tabs. Reporting in Klawak, I'm Reagan Miller.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
In the late 1980s, the CIA was looking for an artist to decorate their new building. Applications were accepted from artists for the $250,000 commission. In 1988, James Sanborn was awarded the commission based on his idea of a two-part sculpture. The most notable features of Kryptos is the 9-foot, 11-inch, large, curved, S-shaped copper screen, which resembles a scroll. The screen seems to emerge from a vertical piece of wood called the petrified wood and is close to a bubbling pool of water. On a metal screen, there are carved letters which form the K1 to K4. On one half of the scroll is encrypted script with 869 characters. On the other half are 865 characters. Besides the main sculpture, there are numerous granite stones and copper plates carved with early ciphers and international Morse code around the campus. In 1999, Jim Galluli was the first person to publicly announce the solutions of K1, K2, and K3. The CIA later confirmed that CIA analyst David Stein had also solved three parts in 1998. The last 97 letters that make up K4 still remain unsolved. After completion of the sculpture, Sanborn was required to give the answer in a sealed envelope to the then CIA director, William Webster. Sanborn, however, claims that the envelope he gave Webster does not contain the complete solution. In 1991, a document was locked in the safe of the director of the CIA. The document is still there today. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday. It is the second day of November, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:26. It will set again at 6:19. That will give us 8 hours and 53 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 37 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 10 degrees, set in 1975, and our record high was 60, set in 1929. Currently 40 degrees under what they're calling mostly cloudy skies. Looks more like partly cloudy up here on Signal Hill right now. They have 70% humidity out at the airport, with westerly winds steady at 10, gusting to 21, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon, with a high near 43, west winds to 30. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 29, west winds to 25, gusting to 30. And sunny skies tomorrow, with a high near 38, west winds to 20, increasing to 30. Tomorrow afternoon could gust as high as 40. Looking at our local tides, we have a outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 3:52 this afternoon and be 3.6 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:46 p.m. of 7.5 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will happen at 4:50 this afternoon. That will be a 5.4-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:21 of 11.3 feet this evening in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning for today and tomorrow. West winds to 35 knots today, seas to 13 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 35, seas to 11 feet. Tomorrow night, northwest 50, seas to 18 feet. And for Friday, northwest 50, 18-foot seas. Saturday, northwest 45, 16-foot seas. Sunday, northeast 25, 10-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through Thursday. Southwest 35, seas to 13 feet today. For tomorrow, west 30, becoming northwest 40 in the afternoon, seas to 11 feet. Thursday night in the Shelikof, northwest 50, seas to 12 feet. Friday through Saturday, northwest 50, seas to 15 feet. And on Sunday, northeast 20, seas coming down to 5 feet. Be sure to visit the Aleutic Museum soon. The ceremonial masks and beaded regalia that are on loan from the French Museum, that I'll try to pronounce, the Musée Berlin-sur-Mer, are returning to France in November, and they'd like to see that everyone has a chance to view them before they travel. These beautiful objects were collected in Kodiak in the 1800s. If you visit the Aleutic Museum on Saturday, this next Saturday, you can get free admission to view these special items. Also on Saturday, the annual American Association of University Women Holiday Bazaar. That's happening from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak High School gym. Always amazing. The Holiday Bazaar this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak High School gym. The entrance through either the high school or auditorium doors. Fun for the whole family, and please bring your own shopping bag. Your reusable shopping bag. Galley Tables is looking for a few storytellers for their season opening event on November 19th. The theme is Home Again, and storytellers have 7 minutes to tell your story. If you'd like to tell a story, email them at galleytables@gmail.com or sign up at galleytables.com. Galley is GalleyTables. Things happening at the library include the Lego Club here at 3:30 p.m. today. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. If you're an adult, you can just go in there and start playing with Legos. Library's monthly writers group is meeting 5:30 p.m. today. For those waiting, wanting to pursue, improve, and share their writing, for patrons 14 and older, please. Space is limited, so call, give them a call at 486-8686 to save your spot. But again, that's the writers group, 5:30 p.m. today at the library. On Thursday, the library will host a Lapsit story time for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. That happens at 10:30 a.m. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and the song with some quality time to play and socialize. Also on Thursday at 3 p.m., the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary. It's open for all ages. Remember, the library is open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Due to staff shortages, the library will close at 5 p.m. on Mondays starting November 7th. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a regular meeting on Thursday. That's tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Join Kanakoa and the Kodiak Arts Council Saturday, November 12th. That's not this next Saturday, but the next one after that, at 6:30 p.m. for the Ukulele Outreach Workshop. Work directly with the expert ukulele players themselves and start your journey with ukulele playing. If you're already familiar with the instrument, you can increase your skills and learn some new techniques and strumming patterns. It's an all-level workshop. There are limited instruments available for borrowing, so if you do have your own, please bring it. This event will be held in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's band room. To reserve your spot, email Hazel at Hazel, H-A-Z-E-L, at KodiakArts.org. You can also find out more details at the Kodiak Arts Council website, which is www.KodiakArts.org. Celebrate science, technology, engineering, and math with STEMAPALOOZA, November 1st through 30th. All girls in grades K through 12 are invited to explore this month-long event. Visit Girl Scouts of Alaska's website, and that's at www.girlscoutsalaska.org/STEMAPALOOZA. To find details about live virtual programs, at-home activities, competing with your family in STEM trivia, earning a telescope, becoming a citizen scientist, and learning what it takes to put your STEM dreams into action. Try at least one activity to learn your STEMAPALOOZA patch, or dive in and try them all. Just visit the Girl Scouts of Alaska's website for details. And as we found out, the ADF&G Subsistence Studies Community Data Review is happening tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and they will be serving light refreshments. That's happening at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., the Alaska Department of Fish and Game conducted household harvest surveys to update subsistence harvest information for the Kodiak Road System for the first time in the last 30 years. So you can join researchers from ADF&G, the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak, and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge for a public presentation of draft findings and other information about local subsistence opportunities. Again, that's tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.